Okay, today is 9th of August. Tuesday, we are going to have a weekly English medium discussion. Today also we have a fairly good number of participation. So we have appointed our conventional topic for the discussion. Before going to that appointed discussion, if you anyone having any suggestion, any other interview reports or something, we can take few minutes and then we are going to go to the our conventional topic. So this is an idea from Venerable Katukurunde Jnanananda. He is the person who wrote this book, The Concept and Reality. He says, Avijja Paccaya Sankhara, have you heard about these terms?
Yes.
Avijja Paccaya Sankhara, Sankhara Paccaya Vijnana, Vijnana Paccaya Namarupa, Namarupa Paccaya Salayatana, Salayatana Paccaya Passa. The contact. Before is behind the screen. Only the Buddha can understand. After the passa, after the contact, normal commoners can understand what is happening and he can say, this is me. I only got the contact. But it is not the beginning. It is not the start. Before that, avijja, sankhara, vijnana, namarupa, salayatana, passa. And therefore, if someone is that, when someone is telling the God created the world, then someone will ask, who created the God? The original creator. No answer. So now we can say passa, paccaya vedana, whatever we do, liking and desire. It has a origin is avijja. Avijja is processing five times and then only it come into the stage, drama. It happened, I can see eye contact, I have the eye contact, I have the ear contact, all the kind of thing. But the Buddha is asking then what is the source of avijja also? I am raising another question out of your question. Avijja also due to asava. Asava is habituation. Our yeast of the in the vat, it is converting sweet into alcohol. Yeast, something like that. So avijja asava is another layer. So likewise, go backward. That is not relevant to commoners because commoners can start from the passa. Go ahead. But theoretically one can explain passa is a processed thing. It is not the origin. That part is called relevant to only the Buddha. So if you are believing Buddha, you accept avijja paccaya sankhara, sankhara paccaya, blah, blah, blah. But passa paccaya thing you can verify. That is human. That passa is the what we have, the touch of the breath, the touch of the leg, touch of the water in your bathing, touch of the food in your mouth. So that is the kayanupassana. Now, if no one is having any other in the Zoom or something, we are going to take start from the last session.
Avasarai Bante.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear.
Yeah. Yes. Bante, we have received one report from this end.
So we can start with that. Please carry on.
Yes, go ahead. Most respected Bhante, recently in two consecutive weeks, I reported about my experience of unconsciousness in sitting meditation. By earlier experience, I can relate to your answers. But for now, for this time, I have the impression that the situation you were talking as a base for your answers was not the situation I was experiencing and describing. So, while you were saying, I am utterly misled, I couldn't help feeling utterly misunderstood. I report blackouts and you talk about black hole. To only mention one example, so I feel we are talking about two very different things. I regret and I'm saying with this with all sincere respect I have for you, most respected Bhante. Whatever may be, I couldn't make use of your answers this time. So I proceed with the trick which I was trying out in order to overcome the difficulty with reasonable results. Slowly I found. Again, I feel discouraged regarding communication and therefore won't venture into a more detailed report today. Shall make a new attempt some later time. All this being said, still I accept that I may be utterly misled and simply not understand. Therefore, I appreciate further feedback. Thank you for your patience, most respected Bhante. Please forgive. Thiruvan Saranai. End of the report, Bhante.
So, in your report, you can see how many times you have mentioned I. As far as I is there, black hole and the black hole, the term I mentioned is black hole, you are talking about the blackout, are two things. When there is no I, both are the same. So therefore, this report is full of I, and therefore regret, therefore misunderstanding. So that is the way I intrude into, just like an opinion giver, like a government lawyer, come and give opinion free of charge. Ultimately, you are reinstalled I, discrimination, black hole and blackouts, and you say it is two. I am telling that not the black hole and blackout is two different things, but as far as I-centered, egocentric, is there. So I have nothing to get worried with you, because if it is so, I am imposing I into myself. Please remind me when I am doing that I-ness. So therefore, just give, at a time, give a discrete understanding black hole and the blackouts. Next time you see it, it's nothing. What is to argue with? Both are the same. The language can give that space, and meditation, especially vipassana, is giving the space, system approach and the reductive approach. I really understand your regret. I really understand your the situation, but it is not your thing. It's a Dhamma regret. The Dhamma friction, we are all in the same boat. So therefore, don't worry. Thank you very much for reporting, and go back to your primary object, see the experience, and try to explain the situation through your direct touch. Personal experience, there won't be any miscommunication. As far as you are depending on words, as far as depending on egotism, we are always arguing. No harm. Discussion means that. We are open to that. But don't think it is without an answer. Answer is there. It may be coming from the different sources, different source, coming from the giving the answer in the completely radical way. So be radical. Try to forgive and forget about this ego. Just see, just whatever the black hole or blackout is something not belongs to me. That's all. We are moving forward if there are no any other such comments.
No reports, Bhante, from this session.
Okay, then I would invite Venerable Buddha Rakkita to proceed with Kalavibhada Sutta. I know he's well prepared all throughout the week, and I am also therefore moved to work with it. So we will give fair enough chance for Venerable Buddha Rakkita.
Avasarai Sanansi. Before we start the main topic, I wanted to, or I had a thought on the topic that Mr. Italy, sorry?
German.
Manfred mentioned?
German.
German? Yes, German. And my thought was that essentially as soon as there's pasa of any kind, isn't it that, or even starting all the way from sankhara, that all of the links are there, except for tanha and so on, necessarily? Because as soon as there's sankhara, then there has to be vijnana. And as long as there's vijnana, there has to be namarupa, which includes things like pasa and vedana. So how is it even that one can see, I see what you're saying, Bhante, by that us, we can only start from, say, pasa. But doesn't that kind of include everything else? That's my question.
If you wish to be Buddha, you can include. If you wish to be just a commoner, you can exclude.
Amen.
Understand?
So the Buddha can look deeper than we
can. Yeah, he is inviting you to go in the inferential way, in the rational way, so that you can include. I say, it is none of my work, it's the work of Buddha, I don't mind. I am looking forward from the pasa, you're still welcome.
Right.
So you can start the game with the parturation, or you can start the game with copulation.
Those words I actually don't... Huh? I didn't understand that.
So parturition is the baby is coming out.
Okay.
But the baby conceived in the copulation.
Right.
Legally, you are not concerned about the copulation. Mm-hmm. They are concerned about the parturation. But the, before the parturation, 9 months and 2 weeks, the process is there. It's a biological process. Legally, you are not concerned about that. People talking about the copulating male and male, female and female, male, female, they have so much of legal implications. Bloody shit. They are doing the same thing in the evening. And when you come to the bench and become the lawyer, when you become the judge, talking about nonsense. They are talking about the Roman Dutch law. Buddha never gave that kind of a thing. He says everything has a cause. You have to tell, for that the Buddha also the same, we also the same, theory also the same, practice also the same. We can start from the lines Buddha has made. We can go the deductive way. We can go over the inferential way. But you have to understand we can't experience it. But it is not necessary for you to experience to become an arahant.
Yes.
But you, if you wish to be Buddha, then you are worrying about it. He says, no, Dhammaji Vahamdra is not enough, Pasa is not enough, I want to go to the Avijja Pacha, no harm. You have some characters like that.
No, I was just wondering, Bhante, because I thought that...
You have the characters like becoming a Buddha.
Right.
Rather than Theravada tradition of becoming enlightened, you want to be a Buddha, then you have a big plan. I mean, we must accommodate that kind of people also. But we have some critical approach. They are the Mahayana fellows. I mean, they are 95% of the Buddhists. But there are some good things there also. But we are in Theravada tradition in this very life. There are no nonsense. Unwanted thing is not. We are doing it what is prescribed just to become enlightened. And there you may not be omniscient, omnipotent, omnipresent. But you no more go in the sansara. So for that, this recipe. But if you wanted to become Buddha and experience the same, verify the same, it takes longer time for you to have paramita and everything. And you have to do the behind the screen. Be inside the bonnet of the car, not in the dashboard. So you have to go there to the engineering. You are not try to be a driver. To driver, the dashboard is enough. But if you wish to be an engineer, it is not a crime. You have to go. So likewise, last time we gave fair chance, Patika Sampasa, Adivachana Sampasa, even the Pasa is divided into origin from the materiality, origin from the mentality. Patika sampasa means something originated from the part and partial of the tangible. And adivachana sampasa is intangible, namesake, nomenclature. So that means pasa is not a mere chaitasika. It has some physical contact. It has some four-dimensional concrete element. But usually in a Theravada, we accept pasa is a pure mental concomitant. But it is not. And that is very deep. And I appreciate Venerable Jnanananda on that. And there's another monk in Sri Lanka coming from that tradition. It is also very recent one, Labunorua. Labunorua monks, they analyze. The pasa itself have two roots, not the one single tap root. Two roots, Patika Sampasa, Adivachana Sampasa. And they try to explain it as much as possible through commentarial exegesis. And very, very sparkly. And this is, I asked them, they came here, I asked them, have you copied it from Venerable Jnananda? Because Venerable Jnananda very clearly explained it. No. We found in the scripts. By finding that in the script itself is an innovation. People don't understand what is written in the scripts. And they found, not in the Pali canon, they found the examples in the Abhidhamma or Pali commentarial part, Abhidhamma commentary, and they explained this is what the commentators are telling. So it is something shocking, electric. So I told, I am happy to discuss it with you. Because I thought Velimanyanadi is a genius in that sense, because he explored and given us so much of things. So last week he was finding ways and means why this Sutta Nipata thing is only explained through the Samatha. Why can't we explain through the Vipassana? It is completely radical. So I am fully endowed with, enlightened with, not enlightened. I am having everything because I follow Venerable Jnananda's concept and reality very clearly, concretely explained. Not the Buddha, what is the Buddha, limited to the Buddha. He says the rational approach or deductive approach or inferential approach, the passa backward. Whether it is verifiable or not, I leave it open. But appear like verifiable, but the Buddha hinted, don't worry, darling, about that. Because after the party oration, enough, that part is enough for you. But he has not covered you to, don't go behind the screen and don't open the bonnet of the car. No. Have I amused you and confused you and...
No. Thank you. I was just checking because I've heard different opinions on these things. As to how much we can see and how much Buddhists can see in things.
There is nothing we can't see. We can see theory-wise, we can see inferential-wise, we can see it the verifiable way. The seeing things in three forms in Theravada tradition. So we have to define. We are talking about the theoretical understanding, we are about the inferential and the deductive understanding and verifiability.
Yes, and I agree that just for practicality, our own experiences where we see it and having that understanding of conditionality in general.
Yeah. That is understand. Please yes. Understand it is less than 30% of the Buddhism. Mm. About 60% inferential. Mm. And another 10-20% theoretical. Yes. That does disproportionate. But the whatever may be, that 30% kept first. The direct touch. So majority of people never go to the direct touch. They go for inferential knowledge, okay, listen to someone, analytical, and they feel very lucrative, very enlightening. But they are not practicing. The speaker also not practicing. So that is why the Pandita Sayadaw says, they give in such a convincing talks, even the rock statue will shake the head. Yes, yes, yes. That's the way missionary works people are doing. Same thing happened in the Buddhism also. So I appreciate when Jnanananda, was he being a monk practicing with us, and he explained it, so he's answerable because he's living with us. Inefficient, but he did a good, fair try. And Buddha Datta from Thailand, he gave a fair try, and he found water. A.K. Warder, also trying to give some theoretically clear understanding without bias. I mean, we are very lucky. They are not problems for us. They are answers. Different answers. Don't conflict each other. That means you don't know how to handle it. Each and everything is an endowment. We must give a fair chance and proceed in day-to-day, in-breath, out-breath. In-breath, out-breath. Left leg, right leg. And we are giving the direct touch the priority.
Yeah, thought occurred whether what he says is substantiated in Nalakalapa Sutta, where the two arahants say Vijnana Paccaya Namarupa, Namarupa Paccaya Vijnana, which loops on one hand, and on the other hand, Namarupa Paccaya Salayatana. So in that juncture, we have two ways, so which one may be Patika Sampasa, the other vachana, other one will be Adivachana Sampasa. I'm not quite sure whether I'm clear enough.
That's a way of explanation, but not directly connected. Adivachana Sampasa, Patika Sampasa, very well they explain in the Nidana Sutta, and even Bhikkhu Bodhi's interpretation, and Venerable Jnananda's interpretation of the four words, Akara, Santana, Linga, Uddesa. Translated in four terms. Venerable Jnananda's one is more familiar to us. Bhikkhu Bodhi's one is more theoretical. But still, the Buddha is giving no connection it with the Avijja Paccaya Sankhara, Patika Sampasa, Adivachana Sampasa is different subject. The analytical part of the puzzle, the contact, the very philosophical, very deep. But then we have to understand our machine is completely conditioned. So whenever touch happens, we have preconceived ideas. We have scripts in our mind. More than the touch, we get a chance to vomit what we know. Present what we know and then arguing because the other person is giving his own script. So the day we are practicing and come into the being, we too become being. That means interbeing. We are losing ourselves and we can understand communication is a hell of a job. Difficult to do it. But if we both happy, one day we can merge together where there is ego is gone. We are merging. As far as we are fighting with the egocentric, ever fighting. It's also good, I mean. Yeah, should have a fight in a film. Otherwise, the film is boring.
So maybe I can just add my point to it too as well. It's a kind of a question of like bacon and eggs. In bacon and eggs, the chicken is involved. But in bacon, the pig is there. So this is the same question with pasa. We know pasa is there because the other things are arising, but we don't really get to see or experience pasa. So it's like you eat the eggs, but you have to think that there was a chicken. So it's a witty difference between bacon and eggs. The chicken is involved, but the pig is committed.
Right. What's the relation with the bacon? Is the chicken and the egg?
Yeah, the chicken is involved, but the pig is committed.
So what is the relation with the pig to this story?
in pasa, we have to be analytical and think, oh, there was pasa, there was a chicken. Whereas with the other mental concomitants, they're there, they're involved, they're present. Like the pig is present in the bacon. But the chicken is not is not present in the egg. The chicken was just involved, right?
Yeah.
The chicken was preceding the egg, like pasa.
But the bacon and the chicken, bacon and the pig, it's a part and parcel of the pig.
That's right, but the egg isn't part and parcel of the chicken.
But the chicken is can give the egg or not, but it's a second generation.
You have to think about it. It's I'm just being witty. It's a pun.
Not witty. You are foolish.
Well, okay, I'm foolish.
You are not how to call you.
Just because you didn't find the humor in it, now you want to denigrate me. It was tough biscuits.
So that chicken and this thing is completely different.
So this is a chicken. This is a chicken, a bacon and chicken question.
But the pig and this thing, you can see the pig is with the seeds of the patipanua, I don't salapamas, and then the bacon also have the same salapa. If it is infested with the tapeworm, if the pig is infested with the tapeworm, even the bacon has the tapeworm. But the chicken and the egg, completely two different things.
Yeah, this isn't chicken and egg in that sense. This is bacon and egg.
It's a part and part. It's a partial of the pig. So chicken and egg is completely genetically different and lineage different. So
it's a joke. I think you missed the pun.
It's not a joke. I'm not using the term.
Okay, so let's crack on here.
Yeah.
So so in this next verse, the psychic Buddha presents this question to the Buddha: how must one attain for form to vanish? How do pleasure and pain also vanish? Please tell me this: how they vanish? We would like to know that. Such is my thought. So the Buddha answers in a kind of like a riddle. He says, not percipient true perception, not percipient true disturbed perception, not altogether without perception, not percipient of what has vanished. Form vanishes for one who has so attained, for concepts due to proliferation are based on perception. So this is a very naughty kind of reply. And I was fortunate to spend a few years with Siado Kundala in Burma, and he liked these kind of riddles. He would give these kind of riddles, and you would chew over it, and you wouldn't initially understand what the hell they were talking about. It was a bit like what I was saying earlier on. This is like a bacon and egg situation. And it can be quite misunderstood, or people argue with you about it, and then we get into this whole chicken and eggs thing. But it's a very interesting the role of how a teacher has to teach a student and kind of give you a puzzle, and you unlock it. And for some reason, my mind likes these kind of puzzles. I really like these kind of things because my mind will just get stuck on it for a long time and look at it from very, many, many different aspects. So like this verse I've been actually looking at for the last 2 or 3 weeks. And I kind of contemplate it as I'm walking up and down. I look at it from many different translations, and I was trying to discuss it. I've discussed this a few times actually with Dhammajiva beforehand, because I don't feel the commentarial description in this it doesn't capture it from my point of view. And I thought, is it okay if I just give my perspective on it rather than the traditional perspective? Because the traditional perspective is that they're saying that this is describing different states of samatha, whereas I don't think it needs such a complicated description. So I'm going to come back to the same verse again, the answer the Buddha is giving, but I'm going to give it from this A.K. Warder's, because he's just translating the Pali more based on the language itself rather than on the poetry and the meaning. So he says, he has no ordinary perception of perceptions. He has no deranged perception of perceptions. He is not without perception. He has no perception of what has disappeared. For one who has attained to such a state, form disappears. For that which is named diversification has its origin in perception. So what I want to answer it is this is a verse that you can really overthink a lot. And rather than just taking it for what exactly he's saying. So he has no ordinary perception of perception. So in this way, the ordinary perception of perceptions is a deluded perception. You are deluded. So what the Buddha is saying here is that you have a kind of a slightly extraordinary perception of perceptions. You know that you are perceiving. Most people don't know they're perceiving. They're just stuck and lost in the wandering mind. Whereas this person knows that they are perceiving things. So in this way, it's not just simply, you're not stuck on form. Like the question here, the original question is how does one attain a state where form disappears? So when you know this form, then form has disappeared because actually you're just with the thought form. So you're not, most people when they see something, they take that object as a thing. Whereas in reality, it's just an impression in your mind. It's the mind perceives something, and then it forms that into a mental state inside your mind, a mental construct within your mind. And so here he's saying, you know that you know. And when you know, it's no longer form, it's nama, it's mind. So he has no deranged perception of perceptions. Again, he's saying here, you're not confused about what you're seeing. You know what you see. You're not deranged about it. You're not deluded about it. And, if you meet people who are crazy, they perceive what isn't in something as something. Like we can all agree, say that this is just a shadow. But the way the light is landing on the ground, there's a shadow forming. Whereas for the other person, no, this is a being, this is a ghost. So they're perceiving something in the form that isn't there. Whereas the rest of us just know, I know that I'm seeing, like, and I'm not deranged about what I'm seeing. So this takes a clarity of mind. So he is not without perception. So this means that we were talking earlier about this black hole and all the rest. So this is kind of like talking about something like that. Like, you know that you know, and you know that you don't know. Like, there's a lot of people, like, they're not paying attention. So they don't know because they were inattentive. Whereas this person in this condition knows they don't know. So they know that the thing that they're seeing isn't there anymore. And they know the thoughts are there or the thoughts are not there. So they're seeing things as they really are and as they really arise in the moment to moment. And when you watch that, you see, like in the breath, there's the beginning, the middle, and the end. So the breath disappears, and you know the breath disappeared. So that's what he's saying here. He is not without perception, meaning he knows that something has disappeared, and that could be the rupa or it could be the nama. The mind can disappear and the body can disappear. He has no perception of what has disappeared. So this is just, again, it's just what it means. It means when something has disappeared, it has disappeared. He has no perception of what has disappeared. Means when something is gone, he knows it's gone, you know, or he has no perception. I know that I don't know because it's not there. You know, it's a very logical kind of statement that he's making. It's not, it sounds riddlish, but it's not. It's very straightforward what he's saying. For one who has attained such a state, form has disappeared. So when you know what's happening like this, you're actually just inside your mind and you're at the mind sense door and you know what's happening. So you're coming back to our eggs and bacon. You're just eating the eggs, you know. You don't really care about the chicken anymore. It's the chicken is not there at all. The chicken isn't involved. So you're just with what you're involved with. So for one who has attained to a state, such a form has disappeared. So you're no longer like out in the world. You're inside your mind base and you're watching all of the mental states that are built. So like in to some degree, everything is in the mind, you know, everything is in the mind because like for most people, everything is not in the mind. They're sort of so out in the world that they, whatever they perceive, they take it as real. But in reality, it's just constructed inside your mind. If you're really like a Chittan Upasana yogi, everything is happening inside the mind. So you see something and it creates a corresponding thing inside your mind. And that process of its manifestation inside your mind is what's very interesting. Oh, I saw that and I perceived this from that. Whereas somebody else will go, no, it's definitely this. And you don't realize there was a process of perception happening. So for that which is named diversification, and here he calls it diversification, Bhikkhubodhi calls it proliferation. So because we don't see things clearly as they really are, we have proliferation from that. So like I mentioned about the crazy person, they see a shadow and then they make up a whole story about it. Whereas what we have to understand is when we see things clearly as they are, we just see, oh, that there was light, there was shadow, and there was a story being created in my mind around this shadow. So for that which is named diversification or proliferation has its origin in perception. So diversification or proliferation of the mind is based on perception. And perception is a whole process of perception. So again, if I come back to the commentaries give an idea about three different kinds of perception. So there's one perception where a little boy sees a golden metallic object. He doesn't know what it is, but he likes it. He picks it up. He brings it to his mum. And his mum looks at that and goes, oh, that's very beautiful. That looks like a gold item. That looks like gold. So she understands that this goldy colored metal thing is, maybe it's gold, you know, but she's not sure about how valuable this gold is or if it's real genuine gold or not. Is it fool's gold or real gold? So she brings it to a jeweler and he tests the gold with a touchstone in various ways. And he says, oh, this is 99% pure gold. This is real gold. Real valuable gold. I can give you money for this. So he has expert perception. He has expert perception. So there's like naive perception, sort of amateur perception, and then master perception. And so these are different kinds of qualities of perception. Perception has its own quality, you know? So there's people like who have an opinion. Like we all have an opinion about anything and everything. But then there's expert opinion. Like a person who has detailed study, detailed knowledge, detailed information, and they can distinguish between. And so when we talk about the breath and meditation, a really experienced meditator is familiar with all kinds of aspects around the breath and the phenomena of breath and the phenomena of breathing and the phenomena of perception of the breath. And it's extremely detailed. And they've had years and years and years of seasoning of their knowledge, of their understanding, and they've talked to different yogis about it. And every day, if they're, you know, in a retreat center, they hear the reports from, we'll just say, 50 or 60 yogis. And you might say, well, what the hell are they talking about all this time? And it's this kind of expert perception about the breath and expert, you know, how this is kind of unlocking knowledge and developing you know, like, for instance, the breath is an excellent object to really cultivate a very deep experience, a very deep expertise. It's a steady object. It's very repeat. It's repeating, but it's not boring, whereas other objects are not. You know, like sometimes I'm trying to persuade some yogis to not use certain kinds of objects because I think it's not useful. Whereas the breath is a very useful object. And if you pay a lot of attention to the breath, it becomes a gateway into the mind and an entry into this whole realm of the mind. And like you mentioned about earlier about perception and all of this, our pasa. Like if you're just eating eggs, you don't realize that there was a chicken. You know, you don't see the chicken, for instance, and you can't see the chicken because the chicken isn't actually there. But with repeated kind of exposure, you start to understand, oh, there was a cause to this effect. And you start to develop a perception of this cause and effect reality or relationality. And like these phenomena like dependent origination, they start to emerge from the data itself. And that requires like a very special object to help guide you through, to be a foundation, to be a reality on itself. Because once you start to go into the mind, it's all perception. It's all shadows. And you can have crazy thoughts and crazy delusionality, or you can have that the object isn't there, the mind, the knowing mind isn't there. You get all of this kind of trickery happening. But when you take the breath as your object and you come to this kind of a phrase, then you kind of realize, oh, hang on, look, this is just a game that's going on here. So this is all about, I understand perception. I'm not fooled anymore by this process of perception. And, you know, it's clear. So that's why when I came across this and I was reading about the commentaries all about these different late states of samadhi, and it's very obscure, very academic, and I'm like, this isn't what they're talking about, I think, at least from my point of view. So that's why I wanted to, support of Mahatero to talk about it in this way from a Vipassana viewpoint. Anyway, we'll be happy to hear what you have to say. And
I will trash you. I will smash you. I will crack you down. But when I'm listening, I jot down few points. Right. And the first thing is the baby finding the jewelry part and the mother understanding and the jewelry. And say sanya, vinyana, panya. Sanya is the word the baby is finding something heavy at the sand garden. Oh, and then bring to the mother because find something interesting. And mother says, yes, yes, this is a pale eye gold. I don't know how many carats. So I have to go to this thing. So it's a vinyana and panya. So this is the way when we are establishing something and go and recording the patent and I am the authority and all the kind of thing. So that is Upanishad is very expert and, you know, he explains very nicely how something become concept become a reality. The child is just a concept. Mother is, it is not just a concept, it's a God.
But ultimately, the exact value is by the jewelries. So likewise, sanya, vijnana, panya. And the other thing is, neurologically, the Joseph Goldstein, not the Joseph Goldstein, the Richard Davidson, he tried to understand how a perception happened and put a person into the functional MRI scan and ask him to see a vision and giving a screen. And all of a sudden, he give a sound to see how the distraction happened and again come to the visual objects, how much resilience. And the sound he recognized as a distraction or a test for mindfulness. Coming back to the visual, he understanding, yes, I am back at home. I am secure. And likewise, he understand mechanical part, no self, how the neurologically they explain. And Amit Goswami see the physics of the soul. Physically, he tried to understand soul is nothing extraordinary. It is something we can explain neurologically. We can explain through the folk stories and how we built up. But he never touched the crux of the issue. He's written a very nice book. And when I'm reading, I read 2-3 times because I am just coming from the village. I have never thought about, analyze the self in physics, physical way. He gave the name, Physics of the Soul. And he's come very close to this point. How a material thing we perceive and come arrive at a judgment. This is a hard one, this is a corner, this is a brown color and all the kind of thing. And give some aesthetic value or linguistic value and then claim myself. But if it is not so important, I don't remember it. Whatever go to the sanya, perception, go into your memory. And within 24 hours, 50% lost. By 100 years, everything is lost. So within that only we regurgitate, we vomit it, and make stories and fabrication. And you don't know, I know that I knew that this, that, and that. Because he is coming from different culture, so his cultural value is different. So we are meeting now in the same place, different people, and talking about the sanya or the perception, talking about the rupa, different things. So Bhikkhu Bodhi gave completely Jewish kind of thing, but he has a very good understanding about the commentariat. But the warder is not a monk, but he has gone through the Tripitaka and has written all the meanings and he has put up a dictionary. And what a dictionary, he gave the idea he is not aesthetical, he is not emotional, but he is a worldly meaning. But it is not his blood, he is learned. But we are Buddhist monks. We are learning for the liberation, not for PhD. Not for any other thing, but we use Bhikkhu Bodhi, we use Vada, we use Dhamma Buddha Rakita, we use Venerable Jnanananda. And I found we are, as he tried to explain, we whenever sanya, whenever perception happens, we try to be mindful. Now I am aware, I am face to face with this one. I am face to face with the breath. And I know face to face with the breath is something, and knowing very moment that I am face to face with the breath is the second thing. But these two things cannot happen in the same moment. So this is the trick. Whenever you become mindful, you cannot be aware that I am mindful. For that you have to have a chunk of thoughts or a street of thoughts. The four so consecutive thought moments, 5 seconds. Then you understand as I am here and now. But it's a completely new perception now for me. So that is why Maharshi Sayadaw says, if I am to use the technical term, bhavanga chalana, bhavanga upacheda, panchadwara vajjana, chakku vinyana, chakku sampasa vottapana. Our stream of consciousness shaken while we are seeing, hearing happens. And then from the hearing seeing consciousness broken and go to the hearing consciousness. And then we understand now I am a hearer, not a seer. And I see the approach is, the sound is approaching me or going away. It's a female one, male one. And we try to figure it out and then put a seal. So it is how many thought moments to understand the sound. So likewise, understand the mindfulness. Because mindfulness is part and parcel in our bag. When Jnanapurnika verily says it's a birthright. But we never mindful. Unless otherwise come and say, "Ah, darling, it's the biggest merit. It's the biggest thing, be mindful." But to be aware that I am mindful. Very easy with the children. So I ask them, "Are you mindful?" "Yes." "How do you know?" "I feel the breath." So you may be imagining, you may be hallucination, then he is thinking. No, then Bhante, when I go to the sounds and I am distracted again, when I come back to the breath, I understand with some signs. Buddha says there are four signs. Akara, Linga, Nimitti, Uddesa. Then the Buddha says, if this akara, the manner, is changing, if this given attribution is changing, given name is changing, and do you feel the same thing in the same way? No. Thing gone. But it's a four attribution gone. Four attribution, when Jnanananda gave different names, Bhikkhu Bodhi gave different names, so each and everything we conceived, each and everything we confirm, is not single variable. Number of variables and the decision we are making so vulnerable, so volatile. And when we are talking, we try to fix it to simple thing. The communication never takes place. So therefore, don't worry about the you and me communication. Understand my eye and the ear communication. My mindfulness understanding and unmindful communication. It's a completely new life. You see behind the screen what is happening. And imagine when there are two people are together. Completely external communication. So Venerable Jnananadi is an expert. He says limitation of the language. When we are talking, we have to be very compassionate. What he is trying to tell. If I try to argue, from morning to evening I can argue with you. Lucky enough we get 1 or 2 hours to argue, so that's no problem. Otherwise, I can declare war against Ireland. Ireland is declaring war against Sri Lanka. Saying both of us being under the British government and you people are fool, we people are lucky, both people are fool. So we in the discussion, we must understand, each and everyone is talking with his own background. I can understand it, but I can't verify it. So likewise, this passa, the contact we have taken, lucky enough, Venerable Jnanananda dealt it very nicely, and that is the best I found. But Labunoru monks, I found they also found exactly the same kind of revolutionary interpretation. And I thought I am very lucky, at least theoretically people are tackling something not day-to-day bread and butter. We are talking about the hearing, seeing, smelling, tasting, touching, and mechanism-wise, we all are the same. I mean, subconsciously, we perceive it exactly the same, but the interpretation-wise is, no, you don't know my background, you don't know the way I am going to explain, you are always arguing, otherwise you are just accepting them emotionally. So likewise, but Carl Jung, he says, subconsciously, we all are the same. Once it comes into the consciousness, four characters Buddha depicted, and then we argue, your values are different, my values are different. But now you see the world is running such in a recession, losing all the grips. So we have to understand, our understanding never in a recession, never in a grip. I mean, it is proliferating. These guys are about to ordain. There are four people, they are ready to ordain. There are some other people waiting. I mean, they are successful people, but they are happy. So likewise, any bad thing happen, it has a silver line. So therefore, in the discussion, we must try to understand the other person emotionally or humanistically and his cultural background. And lucky enough, now everything put into English. Polytech Society did a great job, but unlucky enough, no one ordained. Bhikkhu Bodhi took an upper hand. He is now interpreting again the same. Majjhima Nikaya itself, he wrote 14 times. And when he came to the Anguttara Nikaya, his English was so polished. And he says Sinhala translation is very good. He can read it fairly. So I often go to him and just discuss to see different perspective. He's looking from the Jewish point of view. And now Sri Lankan and Jewish politics almost become equal. Don't look at me in the envious way. You fellows can't come up to that level. But Jewish people, they underwent two world wars and learn it. And they got the technology. But Sri Lanka also, we have our irrigation technology. We know our earth. But we completely lost. Now we are in a complete bankruptcy. But we lucky enough, we don't feel bankruptcy. You come today, I think, Mr. John? Yeah. So these guys living in their individual cottages, and they come and ask, Bhante, we are better off. If there is specifically, are there any difficulties or bankruptcy? I feel guilty because people are treating us like kings. We are meditating very freely. Then I say, it is there. I mean, the people, normally people, treat monks, whether you are meditate or not. So therefore, we are better off. Don't undermine that situation and mind your own business. Be mindful and pay back by understanding this. So I found this recession, this going back is nothing making any friction for me to understand or learn, teaching mindfulness to the people. So that is the eternal Dhamma. And whenever you come to the perception and contact, they are very philosophical. Very philosophical. That's the point where the God believers can't understand. Because they say it's an intelligent design, nothing to worry. Your contact is not important. It's decided by the God. Your perception is intelligent design. Now, it was artificial intelligence came more than intelligent design. But these things ever existing, and we are just amateur, we are just beginners. But anyway, I feel so happy. I feel so, because I take that treasure, I take that endowment as mine. Of course, I have not explored enough. So my whole life is for that. So therefore, whenever this Kalahavivada Sutta come into being, I told Venerable Buddha Rakita, Venerable Jnanananda's interpretation. And how much he quoted this Kalahavivada Sutta is a crux of his teaching. So yesterday he was searching the book. He downloaded. Now he's fully armed with all the book knowledge and the A.K. Warder and Bhikkhu Bodhi and Buddha Rakita. So we are in a floating, we are in an endless sea. So anyone to talk except Venerable Buddha Rakita? American?
There was one thing I thought of was there was a Zen story where one monk points to a flag and the flag's waving in the wind. And he says, is the flag waving or is it your mind that's waving? And that just came to mind from this whole talking. And also just the story of the blind men touching an elephant and they're arguing and fighting because they think it's something different. Everybody disagrees with what the elephant is.
So that is what in his talk he mentioned about this, the parables, the riddles. They are brainstorming. But usual traditional way don't allow students to brainstorm. Just listen what the teacher is telling. But now today, age is different. Each person, when you tell something, we are bound to tell the argument, the reason behind. And people believe the science. But I don't believe science. But I believe the Buddha science, which is very viability. That's when the science borrowed it from the Buddha, but he improved it. That's okay. That they improved up to the artificial intelligence. But everything is in the Buddha's teaching and everything given in a riddle form. But the traditional Buddhism don't like it. They are telling what we listen what you are telling. Just sit. Listen. So we have brought up with that situation. Now we are brainstorming. Yes, Kanda.
What's right, Sanhansi? Just on that last point, I think there's a lot of value in certain Westerners, especially, to learn how to just sit and listen, because otherwise sometimes we can just kind of regurgitate and puke out all of our ideas, and it's not always so good. So I appreciate the kind of come together of East and West, so that we can learn some of your values and maybe learn some of our brainstorming values as well. But yeah, as for things like language, I think the beauty of the Dhamma is that it can kind of, when the conditions are right, then like there is that kind of touch of understanding between people and between ideas. And it doesn't always happen. Like today, Bhante, with the report interview, I'm not sure exactly what the situation was there. But I've felt that as well. Sometimes when you're speaking with someone, there's just this kind of, like, the harmony doesn't come together. But the beauty of the Dhamma is when that does, and then you can kind of feel like you transmitted the Dhamma from them and you can understand it. And that was the, I think, one of the wonders of the Lord Buddha and the way he spoke. And even the fact that it can be transmitted through the ages, on first by kind of our voice, and then by palm leaves, and then by books, and we can still come to understand it. And one last thing that I found very nice about what Venerable Buddharakita said, with when the perceptions disappear, I've also found that very practical, because it's very easy, especially for the untrained mind, like my own, that like it just constantly will just chew on something, always, even though it's long gone. But then sometimes when that little bit of understanding comes, that like, oh, that has actually seized, that won't come back again, then the mind can just drop it, and it doesn't have to keep kind of like chewing on something so bitter. But that is admittedly quite rare, and the habit is to just proliferate. But when that knowledge does come, that like, oh, that actually has seized, that perception has disappeared, don't need to worry about it, you can just put it down, then there is this kind of peace of understanding, and that's one of the most useful ones I've found. So I hope to practice that more.
The chewing is called chewing the cud, rumination. Mm. It's always chewing the past. But when the knowledge comes, it's a spark, here now, and you feel something new. So that is the way we evolve. Otherwise, we are just guinea pigs, just rabbits, another American.
Avasaraya Bhante. Thank you all for the wonderful comments, Venerable Buddharakita, Venerable Dhamma Vijita, and Venerable Sudhira. And of course,
what is his name, Venerable?
Sudhira.
Sudhira. Sudhira. Yeah. S-U-D-H. I call just Canada.
Yeah, easier, right? American Canada. Yeah. So, I liked that comment that Bhante Buddharakita was saying earlier about how, you know, people, I believe you said something to this effect, Bhante, people, you know, they have like a thought about something, but people just get lost in their wandering mind. And, you know, when you see like people in the world, like, and they have they see something that they don't like or something like that, you know, they maybe see like something on a message board, it says like a message that they don't like, they just immediately react based on, like, it's like almost habitual, whereas the trained mind can step back with wisdom and see, you know, what's going on in my mind, instead of just believing the story that your mind is telling you. So, yeah, that's definitely, you know, an interesting point to point out, is that, you know, a lot of people you'll see, they'll just see like, something that they don't like, or they'll hear something that they don't like from someone else. Maybe it's a different viewpoint, you just brought up that story, Bhante, about the elephant, you know, the touching the elephant. They were like all arguing over touching the elephant. And yeah, people, they'll see or hear something and they'll just react based off of that. Like, you said this, I just know that that is like something that I'm supposed to disagree with and just react off of that. Whereas someone with wisdom can step back and say, you know, that's anger going on in my mind. Like, why is the anger there rather than why is the anger present in my mind rather than why did you say something differently? It's why is the anger in my mind? Why is the ill will in my mind? You know? And so, that's, the difference between, the wisdom of Dhamma and, the, beliefs of commoners is, you know, the, this understanding of, you know, if there's a ill will, say, in my mind, if there's a defilement in my mind, it's this, you could say this paradigm shift. It's why is that in my mind rather than why are you saying something that I don't agree with. It's why do I have these bad thoughts or ill will towards you, you know? So I thank you for the wonderful comments, all of you.
Very quickly, Avsarai Bhante, Avsarai, all other Bhantes as well. Thank you very much for the wonderful explanation of the cessation of perception. One thing that came to my mind was even the cessation of perception has some perception in Girimananda Sutta. So it's not completely perception gone. Going away or the vanishing of perception itself is something that we can recognize and understand according to that sutta.
Yeah, whenever the perception disrecognized with perception, it appears like materiality, it appears like a feeling, it appears like a perception itself is disrecognized and volitional and the consciousness. All five become when the consciousness is recognized itself. Whenever disclaim it, rupa, vedana, sanya, sankara, all are the same. You and me the same. The lower principle is happening. We are not self-centered. We can just share. So that's the world for children. That's the world basically in the dreams. That's the world in drama. We disrecognize. We disclaim our normal life and we enter into that role model, role play. You entertain. So it is the Buddha's whole life is a dream. Whole life is a drama. And he used the tactic, whatever may be, to teach others, but we try to learn the Buddha through that tactic. He's omniscient. He's not gone by the face value, as you try to mention. He regurgitate and see, why should my mind become angry? Why should it become... So he can talk about the universal mind. German? No idea? You are happy to comment? No. John? Are you happy to recognize yourself? Is it okay to express yourself in the common discussion? He's from the embassy, so I have to ask specific questions. He's happy to give some more comments.
Avasarai, Venerable Sangha, and Venerable Upasakas. As to what Sumana also said, some useful kind of things that I learned from other monks as well is that kind of like you said, to when that anger comes and things, and asking the question rather like, why is it angry, rather than like, why is that thing like that, which causes me to be angry. It kind of reminds me of this principle that I learned of learning to see like the underlying tendency of things, and how that basically as long as like one has anger, it will find something to be angry about, and look at that like actual habit rather than like the object and trying to fix that in some way. Because greed will always try to find something to be greedy about. Anger will always try to find something to be angry about. Delusion will always try to find something to be confused about. And these are just our defilements. So I've found that useful in like kind of contemplating when these things come up.
So that is how the animation came into being. They are angry with the clouds. You're angry with the big trees. And they think they have soul.
or angry with, I am foolish. And like you attribute soul into the animation mood or you into yourself. So that is how the history made. That is how the storytelling, everything happens. So very interesting when you go deep, deep, deep into the self, the perception become no perception. You are exposed to the universal consciousness, cosmic library. Everything is there. When you become self-centered, you are a physicist, you are a musician, you are an artist. That's how it becomes. So the bell is going. Thank you very much for the participation. We'll be meeting again in the next Tuesday.